Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
The Phil Hay Show.
Hello, welcome to The Phil Hay Show, brought to you by The Athletic along with The Square Ball. Dan here from The Square Ball, Michael from The Square Ball, Phil Hay from The Athletic. Script in front of me says, straight from Jesse Marsh's press conference, the notes that we've normally got.
Not anymore.
That is not the case anymore, Phil Hay.
I thought he might keep up with them anyway, to be honest. He seemed to enjoy talking that much.
Just turn up anyway and see the Scoobs. Oh, come on, Scoobs, get another seat.
We'll get into Scoobs, we'll get into the presser in just a couple of minutes. Just a reminder that we are twice a week until the back end of March. Friday edition is all about talking about the press conference that has just taken place. And the start of the week, we reflect on the game that has just come up. Now, we've had an extra game this week as well, the midweek fixtures, which we're not used to in the Premier League. Now we're up here in the old 38 games. But
hell of a game it was as well.
Wasn't it just? Monday show, yeah, we'll react to what happens at Elland Road following the game against Man United. Just to let you know, theathletic.com/Leeds pod is the place where you'll find the sign-up URL and the New Year discount as well, if you fancy having a read of Phil's stuff. You can interact with Phil himself as well before and after the matches and read everything. You can get the podcast ad-free on there as well. theathletic.com/Leeds pod. Scoobs!
Scoobs is here for Sunday. He said today he expects to be in charge as caretaker for Manchester United at home. The club say he absolutely will be in charge as caretaker for Manchester United at home, which tells us what?
They haven't got a manager yet.
It does indeed. Tell me that, yes.
Powers of deduction there.
Yeah, I think he expected all round that they'd have to have a caretaker team in charge for Wednesday at Old Trafford. It wasn't like Marsh last season. Marsh was out of work at the time when Bielsa was sacked, and Leeds had pretty much already decided that it was going to be him, whether or not immediately if they felt like they needed to replace Bielsa mid-season or at the end of the season if they got to the summer. It seemed a fait accompli, really, that Bielsa's contract wasn't going to be extended. And it has to be said that I think Bielsa was having doubts about doing that himself, given the way the season had gone. But Marsh was available. Marsh was basically able to fly in on the Sunday night, on the same day that Bielsa was sacked. Wasn't quite like Uwe Rosler and Steve Evans, where Steve Evans was in his car outside the training ground just waiting for Rosler to leave. But it was fairly, you know, it was a fairly quick crossover. Whereas for this one, with Marsh going on Monday lunchtime, there was never really any suggestion that a new face would be appointed immediately, would be in place for Old Trafford. But without a doubt, they were hopeful of having something in place and agreed for the weekend, not necessarily for the Manchester United game this weekend, but I think in place and at the point of agreement so that even if Skubala and co needed to take Sunday's match, there was somebody who was already doing the preparation, was already getting, you know, getting ready to get themselves in the door and get behind the desk. At the moment, that does not look like happening. Usual timestamp, 10 to 3 on Friday afternoon. So obviously things might and will change as they did with the last podcast that we tried to record.
Doesn't sound like it though, Phil, because they've said no, after the weekend. And Scoobs has pointed that out.
No, definitely. And they've undoubtedly got work to do. We ran the story on Monday night about Andoni Iriola at Rayo Vallecano doing extremely well there and has built a team actually that a lot of people are starting to admire. Obviously further afield in places like England, but particularly in Spain, his reputation is on the rise. And he's a bit of a disciple of Bielsa. He played for Bielsa at Athletic Bilbao and obviously watched him coach, you know, saw his methods close up. And has, I spoke to him for a piece we did on Motherball a couple of seasons ago, and he spoke about how he had taken a few of Bielsa's ideas or a bunch of Bielsa's ideas into his own coaching career, although not specifically Motherball, because in his view, whereas the players were happy to kill themselves for Bielsa. They might well tell him to go forth and multiply when he asked them to do the same sort of thing. So he said, no, not that game, but you know, other things I've taken on. And the bottom line at Rayo Vallecano is that he has built a very, very strong pressing team, energetic side, who have a small budget comparatively in the Liga, but a fifth at the moment, and have a chance of European qualification. And as time went on through the week, and I wrote this on Thursday, it felt as if, for all the talk of the shortlist and the suggestion that Areola wasn't necessarily at the top of it, that he was, as Brian Clough once said, probably in the top one. And it seems like he is, you know, he is the one, I think, who they really want. That's how it feels. Even if the club wouldn't admit to that, it feels as if he is the one that they've looked at and thought, this could be good for us. So Victor Horta has been in Spain. There is a buyout clause in his contract with Rayo Vallecano, but from speaking to people, it's quite hard to get a handle on how this actually works over there. It's been suggested at this end that it's not a simple case of Leeds going in there and saying, right, we pay for your buyout clause, you come, there's nothing Rayo Vallecano can do. It sounds as if Areola has to effectively pay it himself via the Spanish FA. And it sounds quite convoluted and quite complicated. And any attempts at the moment to get Rayo Vallecano to let him go and to make this happen have not been successful. And as I say, as we talk, it's Friday afternoon. And even though Leeds haven't abandoned that one completely and have not given up on it, it hasn't made the progress that they hoped it would make this week. As it stands, he's still there. He's still expected to... he's been training, coaching them all week, Areola. And as it stands, probably, you would think, going to be there over the weekend too.
Just reading up on the Spanish football rules, and there is a royal decree from some years back stating that Spanish clubs have to agree to a release clause when they sign a player. Now, I don't know if that applies to managers, but perhaps it's just the custom and that's the situation in which they found themselves. But it does allow, from a legal standpoint, these clauses for any player who doesn't have one can then go to court in order to buy themselves out of their existing deal. So they put them in to prevent it going to court, basically.
Yes.
So it seems like it is very much the custom in Spanish football for that to be in place.
But I would suspect, and again, people have been saying this to us, that it's incredibly awkward to go through that process. I think quite emotionally awkward and, you know, I guess fairly confrontational as well. So whereas in a lot of countries and in a lot of contracts, when a buyout applies, particularly with players and transfers, it tends to just be a case of club pay X amount. And I mean, Chris Wood from Burnley to Newcastle, good example, you know, of Newcastle just saying, right, he has a buyout clause of X, we're paying it, we'll have him. And they did. But this one has not gone like that. Again, the indication is that he himself is pretty keen on the job here and we'd fancy it and we'd give it a bash without a doubt. If everything fell into place, we'd be very, very tempted to say yes and to take it. But Leeds can't be at a standstill with this forever. That's the problem. If this was the summer, you might take your time. You might try to find a way around this to do it softly, softly and everything else. But Everton away next weekend is looming pretty large. And I don't think people will have a problem with Skubala taking the Manchester United game at home, particularly because of how well Wednesday went at Old Trafford. And also because people will appreciate that it isn't necessarily feasible to get the manager you want through the door in the space of 3 or 4 days with enough time at the end of that to coach.
No one suggested it would be easy, apart from the chairman.
Well, yes, white smoke and everything else, not to mention JFK, who I don't think is going to be the next manager. But they need to have, when you appoint, you need to have time at the end of that process. If you've got a game that's sitting on Sunday, you need to have time for the manager to get in the door and do some actual coaching. So it always seemed possible that if they didn't keep Marsh for the two Man United games, that it would need to be a caretaker scenario until the end of this weekend. But it surely cannot be a caretaker scenario for Everton and Southampton. Those games just have too much on them. And I would have thought that if by Monday there is nothing in place, there's going to have to be some real urgency when it comes to a decision. And perhaps it's going to have to be some pragmatism as well.
There's a bit of a gap, though, in that story, Phil, which is probably worth exploring, which is that if he's keen to come to Elland Road, or thought to be, and Leeds are keen on having him, he's top of the list. Surely there's a way to make that happen, even if it's him who has to buy his way out of his contract. I don't understand exactly how these dots, we've got, you know, dot one, dot two, dot three, where are the lines between them?
The only way I can answer that, and I have to say I'm surmising here because we haven't heard from Areola, and I think without hearing from him or without hearing directly from people around him, you can't speak for him. But there will be situations, and this might be one, where a manager doesn't actually want to do that. They don't actually want to force the way out. If it can be done in an amicable way, and if it can be done in a way that looks above board and is fair and is kind of due process in their eyes, then that's one thing. But if you have to essentially start a fight to get yourself out the door, there'll be some coaches who aren't so keen to do that. And we've seen it with players in the past. I can think of players who Leeds have gone to try and sign, players who, I mean, I think Ben White, actually, really good example. When in that summer where Leeds were trying to sign him from Brighton, and Brighton were resisting and resisting, and were doing what they've done with Caicedo by saying, you know, it's not for sale. It's how much you bid. This guy is just not for sale. And I think Leeds' feeling was that if White was to go to them and to say, look, I really want to go to Leeds. I've had my time here, but I've had the best season of my career there. I've developed massively. Bielsa's the coach. He's who I've played under. It's time for me to go. Please let me go. Then that one might have got moving. But White didn't do that. And I think part of the reason that he didn't was because he didn't particularly want to burn his bridges there. You know, he didn't want to kind of wade in. So it might be that with Iriola, that's in his mind as well. Does he want to upset the hierarchy at Rayo Vallecano in a way that I guess is irredeemable?
Does he want to burn his bridges gently, Phil? Do you know what I mean?
I suppose you have to have the means and the way to burn them gently, don't you? There are circumstances where it's either a firebomb or nothing. And as I say, without him actually saying anything, it's been helpful today, and we'll get on to Arne Slot at Feyenoord shortly, but it's been helpful today to see Slot quoted as saying, you know, I'm staying at Feyenoord.
Puts it to bed, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, that one never smelt right to me. It wasn't being spoken about at the start of the week. It seemed to become a thing after Wednesday night when it was apparent that it hadn't gone as well with Iriola as Leeds were hoping. But all the noises in Holland about Slot were that he would stay. Feyenoord were fairly unequivocal in saying, no chance, you know, we're not getting into this. And the thing that really stuck out for me was the kind of lack of coverage of it in the Dutch press. They didn't seem interested. You know, they just really left that story alone. It got a bit of cursory coverage. But it felt as if en masse they were all saying, well, it's not, you know, even if Leeds like him, and you know, there clearly has been contact, but even if Leeds like him, he won't go at this stage and it won't happen. So they're gonna have to find a way out of this one.
If Iriola did come in, who comes with him? And could that be a complicating factor? Does he bring a big backroom staff, or is it him and he'll recruit when he's here?
No, I would imagine he would bring staff with him, but I wouldn't have thought that the staff at Rayo Vallecano will be hideously big. I mean, they're a La Liga club, but they're based in Madrid, but they're by no means Spain's biggest club. And they won't, I'd say they have a pretty small budget. And it's kind of expected with most coaches that when they exit from one place, they take a large group of staff with them. Marsh actually was slightly different in that respect. He didn't really seem to have a kind of fixed team around him. And, you know, it was Maric last summer as assistant head coach. Then it was Armas as joint assistant head coach. Not people, well, Armas had worked with him previously in New York, but hadn't been with him at Salzburg or at Leipzig. Most coaches tend to have a fairly solid team round about them. I can't see that being a stumbling block at all. I think it will be a case of Rayo Vallecano not wanting to lose Iriola.
But just returning to something you said there about starting a fight or such a negotiation involving a bit of a fight. If you're recruiting players or managers, particularly during the season itself, rather than, let's say, the summer, when people are perhaps more amenable and things are easy to achieve, unless you've got a willing seller or somebody who's willing to let the manager go, it's going to involve a fight of some description, isn't it? There's going to be some sort of tension there, or, you know, a forceful negotiation has to take place.
But only if the person involved is willing to do it. And that was the point about the story of Ben White, was that if he had agitated to go to Leeds in that summer, it might have been that Brighton would have felt more inclined to sell, or might have felt that their arm was being forced more. But if, even if the person in the middle of it wants to go, wants to come, if they're not willing to make it happen, not like actively willing to make it happen in a way that involves confrontation, then there isn't an awful lot you can do. As I say, I'm surmising here really, because it's for Iriola to say how he sees this and what he thinks. But that certainly seems to be the message, that this buyout clause, such as it is and however it looks, is a problem. And that Rayo Vallecano are standing very firm on this and trying to make sure, for pretty obvious reasons, that he doesn't bail out at this point. It's not even like we're talking December or the beginning of January, are we? It's already the middle of February. They have a chance of qualifying for Europe. They took him on 2.5 years ago. I don't know if people would say it was a gamble back then. He's always had a good reputation, Iriola, but he wasn't an established coach. You know, he's very young and is still very young. And they'll probably be feeling to themselves that they want to get the best out of what's left of this year.
Could the club be accused of perhaps a lack of foresight with this in terms of the timing of the removal of Marsh? And, you know, we had the break for the Queen's death, we had the World Cup break, and they've let this rumble on now until February, until they've done something decisive with it, and they're finding it a particularly difficult market to get a new manager in. And there's obviously still distance to run in this. I don't want to, you know...
Yeah, no, there is,
this, because things could shift over the weekend, and you wonder if maybe they're allowing it to cook over the weekend just to see how the land lies, you know, when Vallecano have had a couple of days to think about it, the chance to get some good money for...
And also Iriola, you know, if he comes around to thinking, actually, I don't want to let this go, you know, I don't want this to slip away, and then to find that I don't have a comparable offer further down the line, or I don't have a comparable offer in the summer. There was no way the club were going to sack Marsh before the break for the Queen's death. I know they'd taken a bit of a battering down at Brentford, but they'd had a steady month through August. The only defeat in that month being the defeat to Brighton, which was fairly narrow down there, although deserved, I felt. I thought Brighton were the better team. But absolutely. I mean, we talked on Monday about timing with Marsh and the feeling that from Leicester onwards, it felt like it was only going to go one way. And we and others did discuss that before the World Cup break. Is this an opportunity to change? And I still feel that had it not gone as it went at Anfield and then, you know, the fight back against Bournemouth, I think Leeds might have been pushed into a position where they felt like they needed to switch it around at that point. And not only does, you know, at that stage of the season, is it probably easier to recruit and the pressure to recruit is lower, but also you would have been offering somebody five, six weeks of time to coach and train and come up with ideas and settle in at the training ground. And I was talking about seeing the woods for the trees and feeling as if that was a struggle for the club towards the end of Marsh's time. And I do think when you look back at how this season has gone so far, it feels like it's been wasted in quite a few respects.
If it's not Iriola and it's not Slot, where do we turn next?
Well, I was mentioning pragmatism earlier, and Leeds always recruit long-term or try to recruit long-term, don't they? You see that in the players that they sign. You see it with the coaches that they've gone for. I know Heckenbottom and Thomas Christensen didn't last for long, but neither of them were intended to be one-season wonders. You know, it was the idea was that, and it was flawed thinking, but the idea was that they would come in and make an impact, which meant that they built things up and were able to stay there for an extended period of time. And the same with Marsh. I mean, Marsh's contract ran to 2025, so in no way was that a short-term decision or a short-term project. But I guess at this stage of the season, there may come a point if it's a struggle to get a manager in. And as you say, you've got the weekend where it's going to tick over. There's time yet. But if you get to the point where you do need somebody, then perhaps you do have to start thinking about slightly shorter-term options.
Steady hand on the tiller. Any names in mind?
Well, I think one that will come up inevitably is Nuno. And I don't think people will jump for joy at that. Although, you know, clearly did have some very, very good years at Wolves. But he would, I think, fall into the category of somebody that you could reasonably approach and say, you know, we need somebody for 2 or 3 months. It's pretty clear that that's not what they want to do, and that's not the route they want to go down, which is why they've been going after somebody like your man at Rayo Vallecano. But I guess if you're in trouble and there's not much of the season left and you're not getting exactly what you want, you probably can't afford to be that precious, can you? I mean, isn't that the story a little bit of Everton and Dyche? You know, the fact that they're looking at Dyche thinking, this guy might keep us up. And actually, here and now, what matters more than that?
But Leeds perhaps then with one eye on the summer and next season and what looks like the more exciting, ambitious project. But yeah, what would you make to someone like Nuno if he did come in? Because it's not exactly going to set the world alight. But are we judging him there based on the end of his tenure, particularly when he went to Spurs, and it just was the wrong move, wasn't it, for him? And the fact that it went off the boil towards the end at Wolves, as these things can do.
The thing I would say about Spurs is that at Tottenham, there's always a lot of pressure on Tottenham to do better than they are actually doing. And the reasons why they don't tend to go far beyond the dugout. The dugout is clearly influential, but they've never managed really to push the squad to, you know, at a level where it was going to be top four sustainable for years and years and years. It always feels as if Tottenham are at risk of just dropping back into the pack below. And Nuno felt as if he was an option they ended up going for because nothing else fell into place, or nothing else that would have been better or more exciting or more productive really jumped out. I actually wrote about Nuno for a game that Leeds had down at Wolves in the Premier League, the season that went well for Bielsa, about how much Bielsa seemed to be enjoying it at that point, which he really was, versus how little Nuno seemed to be. And all the talk at Molineux around Nuno was about his family being abroad, about how little he was able to see of them because travelling was so difficult. Your COVID limitations meant that he wasn't just able to bomb back on a weekend or whenever, you know, on a Sunday or whenever he had a touch of free time. And equally, it's difficult for them to travel over as well. And everybody seemed to notice and to appreciate and to acknowledge that it was not much fun for him. You know, that last season, he was not how he'd been before. He didn't seem to be taking huge enjoyment from it. Whereas previously, I mean, the thing about Wolves in the Championship is I don't think I've ever seen a more guaranteed promotion in my life because of the players who were in that team, Bolly and Jota and Neves and others. It was just an absolute cakewalk for them. And I remember them coming in, smashing Leeds at Elland Road when Heckenbottom was manager. It was just a total walk in the park, that. But undoubtedly, having those good players in the books, he still turned them into a really effective and strong side who did well for a while in the Premier League as well. So he would be maligned on the basis of how it's gone for him latterly, and it evidently did not happen at Tottenham at all. But I would still say there's a talented coach there, there's a good coach there.
Watch this space.
He's been mentioned in dispatches to me, but I should say not by anybody at the club. But I think if you were putting together a list of people who might be easier to get hold of, he would be one of them.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Well, we spoke then in part one about who might be coming next. The guy who is in charge until that happens is Scoobs, Michael Scubala. I like this nickname.
Is it actually his nickname? I really should ask this, shouldn't I? We'd start calling him Scoobs.
We kind of ran with it on our show this week, and it's, I don't know, it just seems to be something that generally has
Jesse picked. Definitely called him it once, yeah. In a press conference.
Yeah. To look at Scubala and listen to him talk, he doesn't sound like someone who'd give himself that nickname, really, does he? You could imagine him calling Mike. Him Scoobs and him saying, oh, it's Michael. Really.
My name's Michael, yeah. But you can call me Mike. I mean, like you. Hey, Mike.
I've found him quite intriguing this week because we went to Tuesday's press conference, and a bit like today's, it was rapid. I mean, it was done in about 7 minutes, and he was really careful to say not too much, you know, very careful not to over talk about Marsh, about what had gone on in the past 24 hours and everything else. They get pushing a couple of things, you know, like Bamford's comments and everything else, but it was handled it in the way you'd expect a former FA man to kind of deal with this stuff.
Do you think over-talking's been a problem recently?
Possibly, yes. In fact, definitely. But so off to Old Trafford, and you're wondering, you have this three-way committee of Scubala, Chris Armas, Paco Gallardo, another coach from the 21s, and you wonder how it's going to go. You know, are Leeds going to get to Old Trafford and get annihilated? Are they going to be able to put together a plan which will work in any way or be as, you know, as effective as it needs to compete? And the answer is absolutely yes. They were very, very good at Old Trafford. Very good for an hour. It got, you know, it got hairy in the last half hour, as it was always likely to do. And you knew that as soon as Rashford scored, that was when it was going to swing sharply and acutely.
I was convinced it was going to be 3-2.
I was as well, yeah. And even more so at 2-0, you thought you'd just see where this is going. And it's, in the end, it's a massively valuable point to them, I think. And a big feather in the cap of Scubala and others, you know, Gallardo and Armas. But particularly Scubala, because what has become clear since is that even though it was this three-way split of authority, Scubala essentially said to Armas and Gallardo, look, we'll plan as a team, we'll prepare as a team, you know, we'll set everything up as a team. But when it comes to the final decision, it's going to be mine. You know, I'm going to be in charge, give or take. You know, we will cooperate, obviously. But if there are decisions to be made and the final calls to be made, then they'll be mine. You know, and that's how it's going to be. And bear in mind that Scubala has never managed a first team side at any significant level. Armas is the one who has been head coach of Toronto and coach of New York Red Bulls and has also been at Manchester United before, you know, and around the block a bit more. But Skubala clearly has the confidence, quiet confidence, to be able to say, look, I'm running the show here. Whatever it looks like and however this has been set up, I'm going to be the man at the front, which was evident right the way through Wednesday's game on the basis that it was him in the technical area. You know, it was him on the touchline from the start right to the very end. And people remember with Skubala that he's been here since the summer. He was appointed in August when they needed late July when they needed a new under-21s coach because Mark Jackson was sticking with the first team under Marsh. And they had a lot of applications for that job. And rather than going looking for someone themselves, as in saying, we want this person, we'll go and nick him, we're going to appoint him, they invited applications and they took a long time to sift them. And they had some really good ones. They had one from Eric Backer, ex-Leeds midfielder, who, by all accounts, interviewed really well, was a really strong candidate for it. Graham Murty, who'd worked up at Rangers as well, was another who applied. People who might have felt that they had more recent footballing experience or more obvious football experience, certainly in the last few years, than Skubala himself. But Leeds were really interested in Skubala. He also interviewed extremely well. And they liked his ideas. They liked the fact that he was softly spoken, but he seemed to be very sure of himself at the same time. He was coming from a futsal background, which is very, very technical version of football. You know, hardcore, small pitch, involves a lot of substitutions, a lot of tactical switches and everything else. And they felt that they might be onto a good thing with him. So in the end, you know, when they came to a decision, even though they liked Backer and Backer had the Leeds connection, and even though Murty very recently had been working in a good academy up at Rangers, they decided that Skubala was the man for them and that they would go for him. And the 21s have done well this year. They're sitting nicely in their league. But I think that the confidence they saw in him has shone through in the past, you know, 48, 72 hours, because that was massive exposure, that on Wednesday night. That is a seriously tough game to get lobbed into your lap at a couple of days' notice. And they handled it incredibly well.
In terms of him being in charge, presumably someone has had to tell him, you are going to be in charge here. They've not decided it between them. Like Victor Orta or Angus Kinnear or Brad Zani or someone will have had to say, someone's going to be the front man to this and it's you.
I don't think so. I think Skubala said, I'm going to lead this. And I suppose if Gallardo or Armas had challenged that, then, you know, they could have had it out in the car park.
Could have done it gladiator style, coming with those giant combos.
Absolutely, yeah. Like the Travelator. Yeah, absolutely. See who gets there. But it sounded to me anyway, from the way it was described to me, was that Skubala, he hadn't been confrontational about it, but he just said, look, I'm going to be in charge here.
And sit down, lads, I've got this one.
Yeah, and I suppose you had to have one presence on the touchline. You know, don't get me wrong, Armas was up there from time to time. Gallardo was in the background. There was analyst Ewan Sharp was there. Tom Robinson, sports scientist, was on the scene as well. But the focal point was very much on Skubala, and I think that's how he wanted it to be. And I was asking him today, you know, were you sort of ready for that exposure? Because it's not like you're off to do a game at a ground where there's like 5,000 fans. You're 70,000 packed in. Like full, big Leeds away crowd under pressure, Marsh sacked, loads of eyes on what was going on. And he just said, well, it's what I've been preparing for, really. It's what I've been doing. You know, everything that I've learned through my career is designed to make you able to pick up whatever situation you're given and cope with it. And I said, well, did you enjoy the exposure? And he said, yeah, absolutely loved it. And he's pretty young. I mean, he's young, but he's younger than me, which doesn't make you pretty young, but he's, you know, in managerial terms, or coaching terms, he's young. So it sort of makes you wonder what might come of him further down the line. I don't even necessarily mean at Leeds, but...
It was addressed in the presser, wasn't it, actually? It was asked. Have you got any eyes on it? And it was a very good answer. I thought he spoke very, very well, which was not to rule it out, not to rule it in, just to say, look, you know, we look after today and then tomorrow takes care of itself.
Which is the best way to be in football, because saying I want to do this further down the line is almost pointless, because you never know how things are going to fall into place and where you're going to end up and how things are going to shift. I mean, say, for example, you get a head coach who comes in who says, look, I really want this person as 21's coach. You know, I know him from elsewhere. He'll do X, Y, and Z. And club kind of accede to that and say, yeah, okay. And then before you know it, you're looking for something else. But it was almost, there were almost quiet hints, I think, of him kind of saying, I feel like I you know, if you were asking me to do something like this, I feel like I could.
And there's, but there's certainly a case of not wanting to run before you can walk, you know.
Which he isn't trying to, is he?
Yeah,
I mean,
no. And he made that point.
Yeah, he did. He said he was expecting to do Sunday. He will do Sunday. There's just no way, even if you appointed a new head coach in 2 or 3 minutes' time, there's really no way that they would have a chance of preparing properly for the weekend. Where it goes beyond that, I don't know. And I think you always have to be dangerous. Even if they get a good result on Sunday, you always have to be careful not to get sucked into saying, actually, you know what, just give it to him, you know, just leave, as in like for the rest of the season, just have a caretaker for the rest of the season. You've got to get that right and you've got to be cautious. But he should be very, very happy with what went on Wednesday, and anything from Sunday would be equally a big bonus.
Given several of the coaching team have stayed on, why did Maric leave?
Is a very good question, which I think wouldn't need asked had Armas gone, because then you would say you've pretty much cleared out the whole of the back room. Don't get me wrong, Ewan Sharp, he came in the summer as well, so it was a Manchester United appointment, or appointment from Manchester United. He's still here. It's not as if absolutely everybody has gone, but if you consider people like Marcus Abad, the goalkeeping coach, he's now been here through four different managers. He came when Victor Orta first joined as director of football. Some of the others, like Tom Robinson, for example, has been on the scene for much longer than Marsh was. They're more like established staff rather than backroom team of a specific individual. When a manager goes, you expect the assistant to go unless he's there to hold the fort for a little bit period of time, or unless the club decide that actually we'll appoint him instead. He would be good. So why Maric is gone is because Marsh has been sacked. Why Armas is still here in the circumstances is a little bit more difficult to answer.
Wasn't it fascinating to look at René Maric's tweets that were posted and then
altered,
deleted and reposted with just minor tweaks to language, but minor tweaks that did a lot of difference to the meaning? If you haven't seen them, do you want to just explain what the sort of thrust of the before and after was?
The thrust of the before was that, and I've got to be careful that I don't say anything that he wasn't meaning to say here, but
it could be interpreted,
I think, that the football we were playing or the way we approached this wasn't really what I would have done. And some of the things that I hoped that I could do with the team or the ideas that I could implement weren't really able to be implemented. And I think you could have taken that as criticism of Marsh or the Marsh regime. I think on the basis that it was then deleted, Maric has probably thought to himself that's exactly how it will be interpreted. Whether he meant that or not is for him to know, but the subsequent tweet was far more benign, wasn't it? It was far more more generous and less incendiary, let's say that.
I did like your question, Phil, when you asked him about if he was enjoying the exposure. Dare you ask him, and he was like, oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's
yeah.
great.
And then he said to him, is that allowed? I said to him, oh, it absolutely is. It's just there hasn't been a huge amount of enjoyment around here recently.
Because I don't know if you've seen the video, the YouTube video of when he sat down and did the first press conference ahead of the Man United game midweek. He looked like he wanted to throw up when you saw, because you know the camera goes onto the table where they sit at the front of the press room at Thorpe Arch.
But you would,
and
wouldn't
you? He looked gaunt and pale, like he wanted to throw up. And then, you know, he's looked very, very vulnerable and human, I think, in this job across the course of the week. So to hear that from him, I think, so it was really nice.
Yeah, and it was why I wanted to know, because your average person getting thrown onto the touchline at Old Trafford would be scared. I mean, you would be, you know, you'd be thinking, can I actually handle this? Can I cope with this? And probably more to the point, what am I going to be able to do if this starts going horribly wrong? You know, if we're 3-0 down at half time and then it starts getting really messy in the second half and I'm the man there that everybody's focusing on, crowd maybe start to get irate and this, that and the other. It's not a nice experience, is it? But I thought he was really genuine when he said, you know, I'm properly loving it. But you get told you need to do the media for tomorrow. You've got the press coming. There'll be a lot of people with eyes on this, even if they're not a lot of people in the room, because the number of interview requests this week I've had, it's been absolutely bonkers. You know, you used to have one or two in the Championship or a handful because you just slightly off the radar, but it seems to be like the only thing not the only thing being discussed, but it's something that does seem to be being discussed on every major radio show and phone in, and you know, things like the Monday Night Club, Friday Night and Five Live, all this sort of stuff.
You just refer them to your agent.
That's right. Yes, Michael. Yeah.
It's two grand an hour.
And the they don't often pay, and we never ask to be paid anyway.
I like how you've made that to make that very clear.
Yeah, and it's,
and you don't have an agent, as far as I know.
It's more time than anything else. Yeah. You know, you eventually hit the wall when it comes to how much more you can give up. But I remember when I started doing the job at Leeds, very first radio appearance I ever did was with Real Radio, who I don't think exists
anymore.
It's now
Hearts, yes.
Is it? Right, okay. So, yes, they've rebranded it. And it was a phone-in Tuesday night, I think, hour-long, just a bit of a chat like this. And I remember feeling really sick before that. And all you got to do is speak.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not like you've got to...
I did it for a job for a number of years, I felt sick for several years at the start of that. Yeah.
So he knows that he has the physical capability to talk, and he knows that he knows what's going on with the squad and players, and he knows what he's thinking about for Old Trafford and what he's going to do. But once the questions start getting fired at you, saying what you mean to say and saying it in the way that you want to say it is a totally different thing. And also, you know, there's the chance that you get hit with a question that you it's totally unexpected, that you're not prepared for, that catches you out and you say something you shouldn't say. Like, it was asked today, where's the weirdest place you've had an autograph? And he said, I haven't had any autographs. I haven't said any, but then again, it's only been a couple of days, isn't it? And he's been cracking on with his job. So it's been a big week for him, and I think he's handled it really well.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We haven't touched on the Man United sandwich, have we? Or are we in the middle of the Man United sandwich at the minute? We are the filling, aren't we? Because we've had one slice of Man United. We've got another one coming up at the weekend, Phil. What have you made of it so far? I think it was a great game.
It was a fantastic game.
I enjoyed the game more in retrospect than I did at the time, I think. I was able to kind of process it after full time and say, you know, that was a really entertaining game and a good point won. Although, Michael, I think you felt like with the game you were saying on our show this week, like, it was 2 points lost almost.
You can't avoid the fact that at 2-0, you do kind of expect to win the game regardless of who you're playing. And I know I should really be damaged by my 30 years of watching Leeds lose to Man United most times. I should have known we weren't going to win, but, you know, the hope was there.
We can't have nice things, can we?
No.
In different circumstances, you expect the team to manage 2-0 up with an hour left or less than an hour left better than Leeds did. But there was a kind of sense of Leeds starting to run out of steam a little bit, which I think was understandable. Ten Hag's substitutions made a big difference. He got them right, even though I think he got his initial team wrong. Weghorst, I cannot for the life of me figure out at all. I've just said on Twitter, I just don't get him at all in that team. But once Rashford went up front, it was completely different, and there was, you know, much more of a threat. And at 2-1, I was expecting 2-2. I think, like you two, at 2-2, I was expecting 3-2. And they did well to see that out. Some big, big performances. I thought Ailing had the best game he's had in so long. I mean, people seem to be disputing that with me on Twitter, but it wasn't perfect. But, you know, he did a really good job in difficult position where he was under a lot of pressure, a lot of tackles, a lot of resistance. But the key to the game, I think, was the tone that was set by Nonto scoring so early. Manchester United started both halves terribly, and that was one of the things that was really annoying Ten Hag afterwards. But Leeds started both halves really well. You know, they were really, really positive and aggressive in the way that they were trying to get at Man United. And although it wasn't like, I didn't feel like it was a massive swerve away from the way Marsh set up or his team as a whole, there were little things about it that were quite noticeable, particularly the way in which Leeds dropped into a front three whenever they didn't have the ball to press Man United's back three. And that worked really well. You know, Man United did not have particularly great ball in the middle because they weren't able to get any great ball in the middle. It was being pressed in the right areas. There was a bit more width, I felt, in the team. I thought McKennie had a very good full debut. Again, faded, but not necessarily surprisingly, as Manchester United came on fairly strong in the last half hour. And it was just a proper barnstorming game of two sides properly going at it. Man United realising at 2-0 down that they could not afford to lose that game and they needed to actually show something in what was left of it because the crowd was starting to get fairly touched. I was there with Mark Critchley, one of our Manchester writers, and you know his idea for the game initially had been about how the crowd kind of were starting to help Ten Hag's team, which has been evident this season, I think, as opposed to last season with Rannick and everything else, where the whole place felt a bit toxic and not overly great. And he was sort of saying 2-0 down. He said that idea feels like it's going out the window very, very rapidly. It was a kind of like a game to love, really. I was saying in my match piece, you never know with football ever, do you? And that's why you never give up on it, because you never will know for sure.
We've always got one.
That's you and I tweeted before the game to say.
I know, thanks for chucking him into the bus, bastard.
No, but I didn't, you see, because it was absolutely right. And, you know, go with strange things can happen. Strange things very much did happen.
What can I say, Phil, with 4 days until Valentine's Day? I'm just an old romantic.
You really are. But somebody's got to be. And sometimes it becomes quite hard to be romantic about football. But you never know. You never know.
Is Willie Nonto on there? You never know.
Nonto is totally fearless. Totally fearless.
Why have we signed him and not somebody else who's in the Champions League?
There must be a lot of recruitment departments right now going, why have we missed him? Like he's playing for Italy. Because that's the thing, he's not been plucked from an obscure league. He's playing for an obscure league maybe, but he's in the Italian national team. Like you would think he'd be pretty well known to everyone.
I think there are quite a few of us, aren't there, pretending that we didn't all reach the end of the summer window going, it's ridiculous.
You'd take him over Gakpo, wouldn't you, at this stage? We said it last week, early in the week.
I think you would.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you would. And from...
So well done, Leeds United.
The position of us all saying this is absolutely ludicrous, getting to the end of the window and, you know, throwing everything on Nonto, to thinking that you'd probably start him every single week if you could. But actually, he seems so durable that you probably can.
Part of that opinion was formed by Marsh saying he wasn't Premier League ready. So you can't, if you take that, you know, at face value
there definitely was that. And also, you know, they'd been going for Gakpo, who aesthetically was far more shiny than Nonto. Nonto was in Switzerland. Gakpo was tearing it up in Holland. Bamba Dieng, I don't think we got to know for long enough, really, did we, before anybody decided whether they particularly wanted him or not. But he was somebody, and he was playing at Marseille, and he was experienced and whatever else. So that, on paper, made more sense than Nonto. But Nonto's self-confidence just oozes from him. And it was kind of like, by hook or by crook, he was going to get in front of the Stretford end and give him the finger on the lips, just to make sure that he took advantage of that. It's a great goal, great finish. And from 2-0 up, I think Skubala had it right, really. Hard not to be disappointed that from 2-0 up, they didn't actually hang on to that. But all things considered, really good performance and a big result.
I really, really enjoyed, and I said this like on our show this week and in the post-match, that I enjoyed the midfield aspect of it, that Tyler Adams and McKennie, clearly mates, clearly feeding off each other. Almost reminded me, if you could imagine two kids on the back of the school bus, just causing mischief, not being too outrageously mischief, maybe just throwing a bit of popcorn, but they're feeding off each other, they're egging each other on, you know.
I think other clubs will have to wake up to that, don't you think, as time goes on? We'll have to be ready for the fact that that's what's going to happen and that's how they're going to approach it, and maybe have to be ready to respond in kind. You could see on the Monday night when McKennie signed and Adams was in the building and did the interview with him for LUTV and surprised him at the press conference and everything. Clearly very, very good mates who enjoy each other's company off the pitch, clearly enjoy playing together as well. And could be a good partnership. And again, a bit like Skubala on the touchline, I think McKennie getting thrown into that, you know, proper deep end stuff and coping really well is a good sign and shouldn't be unexpected because he's been at Juventus and he's evidently a good player. But it was a big ask, that.
Good mates in midfield just takes me back to Brownie and Tongi. Oh, such a dynamic partnership, those two.
Happy memories. Wasn't somebody on TalkSport this week saying they should get Warnock?
I think that was Warnock, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? Yeah.
more or less putting himself forward for the job.
Yeah.
So very much hoping it was a parody.
I'm not saying they should get me, but they should get someone just like me. And they remind me more of a WWE partnership, actually, the way that they went about it, which was to destroy.
Don't nick my joke from Wednesday night.
Oh, was it yours?
Ah, Legion of Doom, yes.
Ah, maybe that's it, yes. Then. You're planting jokes in my head.
Kind of, once again, referencing my age there slightly. I can imagine those folk on Twitter going, who? Like, having to Google this. But they were, without doubt, my favourite wrestling team?
Given how weighty everything had felt towards the back end of Marsh's reign, like you think about the pressure that was on going into the Forest game, do you agree that it feels like a real weight, a blanket has been lifted off the entire club, and getting that point on Wednesday tees it up beautifully for Sunday now?
Well, the piece that we wrote afterwards was kind of focused on the head coach hunt, as it kind of had to be. And I think the expectation was that the tone of it, if things went as expected at Old Trafford, the tone of it was going to be, you know, that this really needs to fall into place now, and this is pretty urgent. And I was sitting at 2-0 up thinking the pressure that this will take off the club when it comes to actually finding somebody is huge, and less so at 2-2. You know, I mean, a point keeps them ticking over at the rate they've been going under Marsh so far, which is not enough. You know, they do need to start winning games. But I think what it avoided Wednesday night was a bad evening, which just, you know, aggravated everybody even more.
It was a sign there's life in this old dog yet, isn't it, kind of thing, you know?
Well, it sent the message that there's a good squad here. And if you're a good coach and a self-confident coach and a coach who perhaps doesn't have endless amounts to give up where you already are at the moment, you know, too much to give up, I suppose, then that sort of game would probably tempt you. You'd probably think, between the crowd and between what the players did and, you know, how close they went to winning that, it seemed like it gave the job more appeal.
So what you're saying is, if we get 3 points on Sunday, then Iraola will be down the bank in Spain.
He'll start his Volvo and he will drive from...
He'll withdraw 10 million euros. he'll walk into the club reception, slam it down on the table and say, adios.
Well, if what's been said to is at this end is to be believed, then I think he would like to be doing that anyway, or at least would like to be in a situation where he could say, thank you very much, I've enjoyed it here, I'm going to head for Leeds and have a go there. But whether or not it's going to happen is very difficult to say at the moment.
Do you feel a sense of relief that Marsh has gone? Because I feel like that's been my overriding emotion, has just been that I've been waiting for this to end for so long, and now it has. I feel like the players have felt better about it. Even in the presser today, just having someone else there.
A different voice.
It just felt... Yeah. And the fact that it was concluded quickly and answers were concise rather than just going on and on about irrelevant platitudes. I just thought... This is so much nicer to listen to for a bit. And maybe it doesn't last forever, but it's certainly in this initial stage.
I think the thing with Marsh maybe, though, is that because he said the same things over and over again, like, you know, he's concentrating on certain mantras about, like, you know, clarity and stress and all those kind of things. And you just kept thinking, okay, then let's have it translate to something on the pitch. And we did see some better performances and there were some good aspects to it, but ultimately it was about results. So, like, you're saying all the right things about you've identified the problems, but they're still not turning it into wins. And I think that was always the disconnect between what he was saying and what we were seeing, and why people became less and less tolerant of the things that he was saying.
It's hard to find the perfect balance with press conferences between saying far too much and saying too little. I think Skubala's got it absolutely right this week in that he's caretaker and he knows that, and it's pointless getting drawn into things that you shouldn't talk about, and it's pointless expanding endlessly on things when all you're there to do is to see them through, hopefully with results, through a couple of very, very difficult games. You know, you're not really there to speak to the press. Over time, I think you would find that Skubala's approach would probably be great because there would be things that you would want to know far more about, unless, of course, you know, further down the line, he felt like he could be more expansive. But, I mean, one of the things I remember that used to annoy people intensely was injuries at Leeds when Grayson was manager that were constantly referred to as weeks, not months.
Weeks, not months. Yeah.
And then we'd become months. And there was never any clarity about what is actually going on. Like, you know, where is this player? What's going on? Everything else. That said, you don't want to have, you don't need or want to be given the medical records. You just want, in the middle, kind of clear picture of where you're at with the things that you can realistically and fairly talk about. I wouldn't want to make it sound like it was personal by saying it's a relief Marsh is gone, because to my mind and my view of what was going on, the football just wasn't good enough and it wasn't delivering enough results. There was nothing in it to suggest to me that it was going to get better. I don't think it was going to get better at a rate that it needed to. I felt as if this could have happened earlier. I think it should have happened earlier. And you were looking at a club who seemed like they were in an awful lot of trouble. So unless you actually want to see that mount and mount and mount, then it is a good thing that they've made a change.
Yeah, and you can't strip comments away from context, can you? You're saying that, like, Skubala knows the parameters of this job, the time frame it's going to involve, so he's just sticking purely to that. And that's possibly, when you're talking about context, why over time, as Leeds United's league position became more and more perilous. And we haven't, not like we've sunk down the table. We've always been there or thereabouts, haven't we? But the games have been getting eaten up. So that's probably relative to what he was saying. And you kind of wanted him to say less and less as time went on.
Is there an argument then to say that even away from a technical decision on this, i.e. a performance issue, that Leeds could have saved him from himself? I mean, I suppose if you're fair to him, in this period where they were not winning and they needed to win, and it was becoming more and more apparent to him that they needed to win, he only really had two options, didn't he? One was to say, look, we're getting there, it's getting better, it's going to click, we're going to be fine. Or the other is to say, we're in massive trouble, and if I don't get results, I'm probably going to get sacked.
Which he got to that point, didn't he, actually?
He kind of did. Yeah. But I think there is definitely only a limited amount of time where a manager can say that without people saying, well, he's basically talking himself out of a job here. You know, he's basically admitting that he's for the chop. And I think Leeds certainly saved him from himself by sacking him before the two Man United games, because I really did feel like they had the potential to be poisonous in a way that would not have been fair, especially if you've lost confidence in a coach. You really cannot hang them out to dry like that. So, it has been for the best, I think. But I'll always look at the Marsh reign and feel that it was allowed to go on longer than it should have done.
What do you think about Sunday then? What are you expecting from Elland Road? I expect a good atmosphere on Sunday. This Sunday too. Yeah.
I love a famously positive, lovely, lovely atmosphere, as it always is when Man United are in town.
Well, if you accept that from a Leeds point of view, that it might have a bit of edge to it. Yeah. No, but do you know what I mean? I expect a really supportive Elland Road. I was saying, like on our show, I almost expect this to have a kind of a galvanising effect on the crowd, pull it together a little bit after we saw some division in the way end at Forest. Maybe this is the thing now, the idea of progress and moving forward and something new is going to start happening, a bit of renewal, a change of voice, not seeing Marsh doing the performative stuff, maybe on the touchline, that kind of thing. Just something different, the sense that the club is heading somewhere. We don't quite know where that is yet, but we'll soon enough find out.
Yeah, it'll be the atmosphere will be really spiky. I mean, I just wonder if Manchester United played badly on Wednesday because Leeds made them, I felt. I thought they weren't allowed to just have their way, and that was a problem for them. Ten Hag was angry afterwards, and I'm not sure I can see them playing so badly again. But I think the players at Leeds will quite fancy this. I think they'll say to themselves, do you know what? We pushed them close on Wednesday. And the wonderful thing about games like this back-to-back is that it's massively psychological, isn't it? Everybody will be thinking to themselves, right, that happened on Wednesday, this went on Wednesday, how do we make this different, how do we make that different? And it's so fresh that you can't have forgotten it. I thought Fred was dreadful. I just cannot get Weghorst at all.
Let's hope he starts then, yeah.
I'm not saying this because he'll score a hat-trick on the weekend. I'll say this on Monday. I think Leeds will be doing well if they play as well or better. Again, I suspect Manchester United will play better. It's in a funny sort of way, actually, potentially a more difficult game than Wednesday.
But do you think the atmosphere might help in that regard? Because it's going to be raucous. It's going to be animalistic. You know, there's a real chance that hopefully the Man United players, I'm not going to say they're going to crumble under the atmosphere because they're professional footballers, but it can have a bearing on players. We saw that against Chelsea earlier in the season.
Yeah, and the commitment of Leeds on Wednesday night was fantastic. And that'll have been driven partly by the way in which players always feel like questions are being asked of them when a head coach gets sacked. You know, it falls on the head coach, but it comes to it that usually happens when a team have not been performing. And you can't totally separate the two. You know, you can't say that a lot of these players have played particularly well this season. It's, you know, aspects of it have been really poor. But also, huge, raucous away end on or away crowd on Wednesday, as huge as Old Trafford allows it to be in that section. And that will have helped as well. You know, that will have kept them very, very honest in the way that I think it will do on Sunday again. What I think I'll be looking out for, I'm probably expecting, is a faster start from Manchester United, certainly in the first half, but probably in both halves. And the first goal will be absolutely massive. It will be.
That wraps up today's show. Then we will debrief this game, the upcoming game on Monday, you and I, Phil. It should be entertaining to say the least, shouldn't it? Hopefully in a positive way.
Absolutely, absolutely. And hopefully we've got a little bit more to offer on the managerial front as well.
TheAthletic.com/LeedsPod. If you are not yet signed up to The Athletic, get on there and check out the New Year's offer. Interact with Phil before and after the game on Sunday and read all the coverage of that as well. We will speak to you on Monday. See you soon.
The Phil Hayes Show.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.